Hello, my name is Josh.
I'm Jamie.
And welcome to A Conversation with Two Geeks, a podcast where we talk about movies, comics, and everything in between. Today, we're going to be talking about the official trailer for Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse to all the stuff that's happening with Warner's and DC. And trust me, there was a fucking lot and such. Also, I have an exclusive interview with Werewolves Within director Josh Rubin as we talk about multiple things, including Werewolves Within, his newest movie that he produced with Noah Segan, Blood Relatives, and much more. And yeah.
Also, feel free to follow us on all our social media platforms. We're on Twitter at Convo with Two Geeks. We're also on Facebook and Instagram at Conversation with Two Geeks. And if you want to send us an email with anything from this episode or one of our previous episodes, we're at conversationwithtwogeeks@gmail.com. And if you find our Twitter, we have links to our other social media platforms on there as well.
You also find a back catalog on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever podcasts will listen to. How are you today, Jamie?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
I'm good, but I won't lie, the last 48 hours have been just like, I've been sleep deprived, I've been tired, just a whole lot of shit, man. And yeah. It's the busiest time of year.
Yeah.
And it just, there are times where I just want to like, but I digress. Anyways. Let's get into our first topic. We got an official trailer for probably my most anticipated this year and next year, as it was supposed to come out this year, but then it was really next year. Anyways, we got the first official trailer for Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Synopsis reads, after reuniting with Gwen Stacy, Brooklyn's full-time friendly neighborhood Spider-Man is catapulted across the multiverse, where he encounters a team of Spider people charged with protecting its very existence. But when the heroes clash on how to handle a new threat, Miles Morales finds himself pitted against the other Spiders and must redefine what it means to be a hero so he can save the people he most loves. Directed by Soul co-director Kent Powers, Netflix is Voltron legendary defender director Joaquin Dos Santos and Justin K. Thompson, and written by Phil Lord and Chris Miller, alongside Shang-Chi and Legend of Ten Rings scribe David Callahan. The film starred returning voice cast, actually, of Shameik Moore as Miles Morales, a.k.a. Spider-Man, Hailee Steinfeld as Gwen Stacy, a.k.a. Spider-Gwen, Jake Johnson as Peter B. Parker, a.k.a. Spider-Man, Brian T. Henry as the voice of Jefferson Davis, Luna Lauren Velez as Rhea Morales, with Oscar Isaac, Issa Rae, Daniel Kaluuya joining the cast as Spider-Man 2099, a.k.a. Miguel O'Hara, Jessica Drew, a.k.a. Spider-Woman, and Spider-Punk, respectively, with Jason Schwartzman, Greta Lee, Rachel Dratch, Dermot Tetron and Chia Wiggum rounding out the cast. This film is set to be released on June 2nd, 2023. So this trailer, I won't lie, when this trailer, this is my most anticipated movie of both, was my most anticipated movie of this year before they pushed it back to 2023, is my most anticipated movie of 2023. And I won't lie, that whole entire bit with just Miles and his mom just talking, just made me. I was at work when this dropped. This made me fucking cry.
I know. It's going to be a lot. The first one was so good. And it's been a minute since you got the next one. And I'm super excited for this one. I love the animation style of these movies. They're so freaking cool. Mm-hmm. And they're so well done. And I just think it's going to be a lot. And it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, so and when it comes to being a lot, I wasn't expecting like the second half of that trailer to just go into full blown chaos mode because like
I know
like he's just like getting like when like I don't know if they're like attacking him because I also saw something like gray on when folks are like trying to get Miles and stuff, like I saw something gray, which like I know the villain for the movie along with like Sing Vulture is like this character name called the Spot.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff. I don't know if they're like trying to attack him or something, but like just seeing all the Spider-Man attack, also the freaking Spider-Man.
I know. It's just, there's going to be so much going on with this movie. It's going to be crazy. Maybe that's what I'll watch tonight, is watch Spider-Verse again. It's been a minute since I watched it.
It has been a minute. I think it's been like 4+ years since the original came out. And like, I know it came out around this time and stuff. So
mm-hmm. It was good. I remember watching the first one in theaters and freaking loved it. I still think it's the best Spider-Man movie.
Okay. That and Spider-Man 2 like go head to head sometimes.
Yeah. It's been a minute since I watched the original Spider-Man 2. It, like, I haven't seen the Sam Raimi movies in a while. It's been a while.
I've seen him. I've seen him most recently, mainly because of No Way Home and stuff. But like,
I meant to
just
rewatch him. I just ran out of time.
that's fair. That's fair. Last year was a bit busy, but yeah, no, like, just they kind of go head to head sometimes, and like, just that first movie was just great, and I just, and also seeing, but just seeing the epicness and stuff, and also the fact that like, it just seems like all like the spider, and also like the conflict and stuff. Like, I think there's gonna definitely be some struggle, especially among the spider, the spider people and stuff. And just like, especially with that last line, be like, we're supposed to be the good guys. Like, some shit is gonna go down, and it's gonna be emotional and heavy, and just, oh my God. Just,
For sure.
I'm not ready for this, y'all. I'm
I
excited,
know.
but I'm just like, I'm not ready. And also, like, Peter B. Parker has a kid now.
I know.
I'm fucking excited for this movie. I can't wait. Just give it to me now.
It's gonna, I know, I want it now. It's going to be a lot of fun. We were supposed to get it in the fall of this year, and then it
Yeah.
got pushed back. And it's still part one, part two, right?
Okay, so I won't say where I got this from, but apparently, the reason why it was kind of like split into two parts because the animatic was like 4 hours long.
Oh, jeez.
So, like, it's like, look, let's just cut this in half. 2023 is going to be across the Spider-Verse, and then 2024 is going to be beyond the Spider-Verse.
Okay, makes sense. Okay,
So, it
cool.
is. So, the way I kind of like see it is kind of like Infinity War Endgame.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah.
So, there's that and stuff. So, again, I'm very excited for this movie, but I definitely know it's going to be heavy. But yeah. Anyways, moving on to the distinguished competition and the shit show that has been recently. On Tuesday, director Patty Jenkins, and by the way, also, before I actually start, this fucking news just drives me nuts. And I wasn't even able to lock down anything until like literally this morning. So thank you very much, DC.
DC is kind of a shit show right now. So, I have thoughts about all the stuff that goes on. Are we going to talk about the
But
Henry
let's.
Cavill stuff or
Oh no! This is gonna be just
the Patty Jenkins stuff?
the Patty Jenkins through. Here, but yeah, no, it's just. Anyways, let's get to it.
Sounds
On
good.
Tuesday, director Patty Jenkins released a statement regarding the recent rumored departure slash borderline cancellation of Wonder Woman 3, saying that I originally. And by the way, this is a very long statement, but this is basically the chunk that I got. I originally left Rogue Squadron after a long and productive development process when it became clear it couldn't happen soon enough, and I didn't want to delay Wonder Woman 3 any further. When I did, Lucasfilm asked me to consider coming back to Rogue Squadron after Wonder Woman 3, which I was honored to do, so I agreed. They made a new deal with me. In fact, I am still on it, and that project has been in active development ever since. I don't know if it will happen or not. We never do until the development process is complete, but I look forward to its potential ahead. Jenkins continues saying, when there started to become backlash about Wonder Woman 3 not happening, the attractive clickbait false story that it wasn't me, killed it, or walked away started to spread. That is simply not true. I never walked away. I was open to consider anything asked of me. It was my understanding that there was nothing I could do to move forward at this time. DC is obviously buried in changes they are having to make, so I understand these decisions are difficult right now. And judging from those changes beforehand, we kind of also got a detail of what DC was initially planning beforehand. According to THR's Heat Vision, we now know more news regarding the various projects that were at DC before James Gunn and Peter Safran were tasked with taking DC in a new direction. The first of the projects was going to be the aforementioned Man of Steel 2, where, according to the article, creator of the TV series Peaky Blinders and writers such as Spencer, Steven Knight, had penned a treatment for the project in the fall. However, that treatment didn't thrill Warner's executives, who made notes. The second project revealed was to be an adaptation of the 1986 crossover Crisis on Infinite Earth, with that cameo's forthcoming DC movies next year would have breadcrumbed into the crossover with former DC head Walter Hamada planning for Cavill to return in the proposed adaptation. But of course, that obviously didn't happen. And finally, the third project was Batman Beyond, with screenwriter Christina Hodson, who, by the way, wrote the upcoming Flash movie, as well as previously Birds of Prey and Batgirl, may that rest in peace. Pitching a take on the futuristic Batman that excited executives, with some of the story details being that a romance between Michael Keaton's Batman and Michelle Pfeiffer's Catwoman would have been resuscitated. Hadza was about 2 weeks into writing, however, when she was told to stop following the hires of Gunn and Safran. Now, as to what Gunn and Safran are doing, well, Gunn gave a lengthy Twitter thread saying that he and Safran have completed a slate of projects that have been completed and will reveal it early next year. Well, one of those projects actually being a new Superman movie, set on an early part of his life, with Gunn set to write the script but not direct. Gunn also revealed that he has had a meeting with Cavill, which Cavill then corroborated in a statement on Instagram, with both of them confirming that the actor will not be reprising his role as the Man of Steel. As for directing, Gunn has also revealed that he and Safran had a meeting with Ben Affleck about directing the project, though what that is currently unknown. So, this has been a week.
Okay, should we break this down?
Let's break this down.
Let's talk about the Patty Jenkins stuff first. We'll just kind of go in order,
Yeah,
I
so
guess.
Patty Jenkins. So we finally got clarification on what the fuck actually happened.
Yeah.
And also, like, in addition to this, James Gunn revealed a tweet that saying, like, hey, the meetings between her, between him, Patty, and producer Peter Safran, just, I thought that went productively well and stuff, and it was amicable and all that jazz and stuff. So I, considering
This
others, oh, sorry, go ahead.
feels more of wanted to do it with the timing and everything, it just didn't work out. And then with everything going on with DC, it just didn't make sense. That's kind of my vibe that I got from it.
Yeah, I'm kind of feeling that as well and stuff. And again, I said this last week and stuff about my feelings on Patty and stuff, it's just a crappy situation. Just a crappy
Yeah.
situation all around. And I don't have any ill will feelings for either party and stuff. And it's just it's messy, it's crappy, and just yeah. And I'm glad we kind of finally got clarification on what happened from her own words and stuff that I respect and stuff. So obviously there's that. And now getting into the stuff before pre-James Gunn and Peter Safran hiring. Man of Steel 2. So I know that there have been multiple Man of Steel pitches that were okay, the first one by Charles Roven, and now this one and stuff, and which is interesting. And then making notes, then them making notes, which I imagine that this is probably DeLuca and Pam Addy making the notes and stuff. So obviously there were people gunning for the position and stuff. So it does seem like, okay, at least that was on the docket before stuff happened. So there was obviously that. And then there's Crisis on Infinite Earth, which I remember hearing something early on about that, but
I have thoughts about this. Why? You haven't built up to it. Like, if that's what Gunn wants to do now, fine, do that. Because this is
No,
basically,
this was before Gunn. This was even before Gunn
I
was hired.
know, I know, but still, it makes no sense then either. Like with all of that stuff, to be honest with you, like because there was no build up to it, like at all. Like we hadn't even gotten to the multiverse stuff with DC at all yet. In the movies, we have it. We were barely getting there with the Flash movie now that's supposed to come out. Like that's going to be our first real big, as far as I can remember, we didn't really deal with freaking multiverses yet. So I don't know. It's going to be a whole freaking that I mean, like Crisis is DC's equivalent to like Infinity War and Endgame. Like it's a big freaking deal. So like you if like you build up to that kind of stuff. That's my biggest issue with that. It just didn't make sense for me.
Yeah, and I will say without saying
The
stuff, just
DC TV did a better job than
oh yeah,
this.
oh hell yes, hell yes. Without saying some stuff, I can see it's weird because I'm not gonna say what I know because I don't want to get in trouble with anyone, but I do know some stuff, and I do think that this was somewhat valid from certain things I know, and that's all I'm gonna say on the matter. And then Batman Beyond. Now, as soon as I heard about this, everyone kind of went into like Like, obviously, this probably would have happened had, you know, certain things panned out. And obviously, I would have been down to seeing a Batman Beyond movie with Michael Keaton. Who knows, that might still happen. But, like, just, and obviously, like, seeing Selena Kyle, especially Michelle Pfeiffer coming back, although that would have been interesting because something I learned while doing the Batman 89 episode, actually, I don't know if you guys noticed or not, but Keaton and Pfeiffer actually dated. Now, this was back in like the 80s. So obviously, you know, time has passed, but yeah, they
Yeah.
actually dated for a hot second.
That would have been funny.
Yeah, it's a little nuts and stuff, but that would have been interesting, but obviously that's not gonna happen. And now we get into the whole gun Safran. And by the way, this stuff has happened within the last 24 hours. I will say this. Last week, Jamie, you kind of mentioned that like DC probably needs to do a hard reboot. And I was somewhat hesitant through that. I'm gonna say this. I'm kind of with you now on it, especially given the direction we're going with. And this is coming from someone that, I'll be honest, guys, I have been done with the Snyderverse since like 2017. And while there have been movies within that era that I have liked, there's also movies that I haven't liked. And I also will admit, a part of the fucking fan base, again, Snyderverse, and again, if you're, look, if you were a fan of DCEU and you weren't attacking people or you weren't like just being a general asshole to folks, you're good. You're good in my book. You're fine. But for those that just were like fucking assholes, I'm sorry. You kind of ruined this for me. You almost ruined this for me. And so I've wanted to just to move on since then and just wipe the slate clean and stuff. And I feel like they need to. And I know, and I've been seeing this all, and I've actually been seeing this all morning about folks, about just everything with Cavill. And do not get me wrong, I feel for Cavill, and I also feel for any of the other actors that might be affected by this, because chances are there might be a clean say. I don't know about Levy. I don't know about Robbie. I don't know about Viola Davis. I don't know. We don't know about any of the other actor creatives involved with the previous films. We don't know. Gunn might pull off a Marvel MCU style variant sort of thing and stuff. And it's not. And then also like with that, like, you know, there's the Earth One, Earth Two thing. Two thing and stuff, and like obviously even you set up, but like there is a possibility. But I think anything involving like Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, The Flash, even Aquaman, I think that just might be the wipe. I think y'all might have to wipe the slate clean with that, and I think that might just be for the best because this has so much baggage, and I do not blame Gunn for just wanting just to reboot. Again, I do feel for Cavill. I definitely feel like he definitely got the short end of the stick. And also, it kind of reminds me of Andrew Garfield pre on No Way Home and stuff. But at this point, I just want to move the fuck on. And I do, and I just, I see just a lot of, I also just see possibility. I see possibility, especially with Gunn only writing the script, because he's only done that twice in his career. First with Brightburn, where he produced it and kind of came up with the story with other people kind of chiming in. And then with the Belko experiment, which he wrote, but someone else directed. So, anyways, please.
I've seen a lot of stuff of people being super upset that Cavill's not coming back. And like I get it. I love Cavill as Superman. I just think there's just I agree with you now. There's too much baggage tied up in DC right now, where with the main stuff with the big three, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, and they might be able to keep Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn. That might be a possibility. A lot of people love her. She's a fan favorite. She might be able to do something with that. But I think I agree. It's as much as it kills me that we're going to lose some of these actors that we really like as these characters. We just need to start over. And I know some people are like worried about it and stuff, but like just let him start fresh. Like, let him start on a clean slate. If he wants to use some of the more not as big characters and bring them in and kind of have them do a little small reboot, that's fine. But with the big stuff, he needs to start, like, it's time to start over because it's getting too much. And I even saw a TikTok this morning, literally like probably like 10 minutes before we started recording, where this guy was talking about how DC was watching Marvel start off with like Iron Man and stuff, and just kind of watching what they were doing and not really thinking about doing anything like that and doing the interconnected universes and all of that stuff. And then Avengers hits and does big in the box office, and then DC goes immediately into panic mode right after Dark Knight trilogy wraps up, and they start quietly putting in Man of Steel into production, and then they see Avengers over in the corner doing huge, and then they're like, oh shit. And so then they panic, and that's how we got into this mess, because DC saw, oh, people actually like this, people can follow this, people want to do, like, people like this kind of stuff. Oh, we have our own version of this, kind of. We have our own characters that we can do this with. Why didn't we do this? And then now they tried to play catch up, and now we're in this mess. Because that's what I feel like happened. They tried to play catch up, and it ended up not working out as well as they wanted to. And as far as the whole Snyderverse thing, I know some people who are awesome, who love the Snyderverse stuff, who aren't assholes. There's some that are assholes. It's just, we just gotta chill, guys. We just gotta chill, relax. I know we all don't have faith in DC right now. Waters is burning to the ground right now, it feels like. So we just kind of gotta see what happens. Like, I know people are like, well, what about all the, like, the Shazam 2, The Flash, all those movies that are coming out, Aquaman 2? Like, just enjoy those, like, treat those as like closure, I guess, for this phase of DC. Like, just treat it as like last ride of these versions of this character, these characters. Have fun with it. Enjoy it as best you can. And I know it feels kind of pointless now because there's no like build up to anything, but just kind of, I don't know, just I'm gonna just treat it as closure and whatnot, and just kind of see what ends up happening. So
No, and
yeah,
also
it's a whole
me.
mess. It's a whole mess. I don't blame if you guys are burnt out and aren't interested or like upset or whatever. That's totally valid because DC is in a freaking mess right now and whatnot. So I say we just relax, like what you like, watch what you want to watch, just keep tabs because at least it's interesting and at least it's drama. So.
I won't lie. I having gone on Twitter and just him being transparent with folks, which by the way, I fucking love.
I do appreciate that.
Because like, and he's always been like that, like even like before his hiring and stuff, and just in general, like he always is a transparent too. Like I just love the fact that he like scoop but like scoopers and stuff, which we sometimes report on, but also sometimes don't. He clapped back at like a rumor about like them like considering like potentially bringing in like Pattinson, the Robert Pattinson Matt Reeves
He said
version of
no.
Batman, and he said no. And I just love the fact that like Matt Reeves like tweeted on me like, you know, the only scooper I like these days is Mr. James Gunn, and I was like, oh shit.
Yeah. Listen, like, Pattinson's Batman would be fantastic as a Batman in a multiverse, but I also like him in his own little corner universe, just doing whatever he's doing and being more like doing the more mystery detective movie stuff like that, what the first Batman was. So I'd say just let Matt Reeves chill and have fun with what he's doing right now. So just not worry about that right now. And honestly, I think that's the thing where they need to set. Like, we need to. And also, I saw something on Twitter where somebody was tweeting, because Gunn said, or wherever the article said, that the Superman movie that Gunn's developing is going to focus more on the younger years, which is what we're all kind of familiar with Clark Kent and stuff like that. It's very familiar. And so it's like somebody tweeted out, like, let DC get past that phase. And I kind of get that point, but I'm also like, let him start over. Hopefully he'll be around long enough where we can actually get past this phase, you know?
And
So.
yeah, and also like I just want to also point out like we've seen this with the Batman. Like the Batman's not an origin. Like Matt Reeves is the Batman. Like that's not an origin movie. That's set in his second year, so it can work. I saw a similar tweet about that and stuff, and I was just and I was actually kind of annoyed with that one. I'm not gonna say who it is and stuff, but like I was actually kind of annoyed because it was just like
I
he.
get both perspectives because I get the frustration, but I also am just like, I also get the point where why they're wanting to wipe this, why they want to, why they feel the need to start over because of how much of a mess they're in and how much baggage and how much convolutedness there is. I don't even know if that's a word, but is going around right now with DC. So I get both points. I feel for DC fans. It sucks because like we want the movies to be good. We want what Marvel has in a way, in their own version. We want the movies. We want the interconnectedness. We want like that feeling with those with the DC characters. So it just it. And that's why I like the Arrowverse so much, guys, because we had that with the Arrowverse. The closest thing we ever got to that. It might not have had the big three, but we had Flash, we had Supergirl, and we had Arrow. So, and it was a lot of fun. But yeah, and I know that's a whole other conversation, but yeah, that's what we want. We want that with the movies. So we'll
No, it
see.
we'll see.
Gunn does have a. He does know superhero movies. He knows how to make the Guardian movies are fantastic. He knows how to do superhero movies, so I think he'll be able to figure it out.
And I trust Gunn, especially also with like also in addition to his Guardians stuff, Suicide Squad and Peacemaker, which again I know you haven't seen for various reasons, but they were so fucking those are honestly some of my favorite parts of the recent DC stuff and stuff. And like it just I trust Gunn. I trust James Gunn and stuff, and I believe in him. Let's let the man do what he
Let's
wants.
just see what happens. Let's just see. At least, like, if he's starting clean, then at least we can like get an idea of how this. Because he obviously like he tweeted cryptic stuff. He tweeted that what was it, the Kingdom Come picture or whatever.
Thank
So
you.
he obviously has a plan. He obviously wants to go somewhere with DC. So he has an idea of where he wants to go. Now listen, if we get a freaking car if we do eventually get a Crisis on Infinite Earths like actual movie adaptation, I'm gonna freak out. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
But we'll see. And also like and also before we enter on the
Because it's
next.
very early. He's just starting. He said we're gonna get more news about stuff coming out in the beginning of the year. So I believe he said that in one of his tweets this week.
I believe he also said that as well. And also one other thing I want to mention before we enter into our next topic. Gunn is only writing the Superman movie. He's not directing, which I found very interesting because he's only done that twice in his career. And I do, and I'm actually excited about this because you can get a talented young there the possibilities are endless with that because I can see like Gunn just delivering to someone like new and up and coming and stuff and be like, hey, I wrote this story, I wrote the script, you can do whatever you want with it, you can rewrite it even and stuff. And like just I would like to see that both behind I think there's just a tremendous amount of opportunity, but behind the camera as well as in front of the camera. Also, let's not forget, the man loves his B and C list characters and making them in the household names.
Listen, I feel like he's gonna have he that's true. He took the Guardians and put them on the map because for most people who, unless they were huge comic book nerds, didn't know who the Guardians of the Galaxy were. So he has the opportunity to take more low, not as well known characters and put them on the map. Like you said, like he can do stuff like that, but I also think he understands how important Superman is, how important Batman is, and how important Wonder Woman is. So I'm sure we're gonna still get our big ones, but I
Oh,
also
yeah.
feel like he's going to be able to do some really awesome stuff with some not as well known characters. Like if he brings in my girl Kara, I'm gonna freak out. So if he keeps her around. So
Yeah, that might be possibly. I'm also could see Booster Gold.
Booster Gold. Depending on how the Blue Beetle movie goes, Blue Beetle and stuff like that. So like there's a lot of opportunity for some not as big well-known names to pop up. So we'll see what he decides to do. And I know that's not everybody's cup of tea. People like to see the big characters, and I get that, like the A characters, but we'll see what he decides to do.
Yeah.
Well,
Anyways, moving on to our next topic.
that was a long conversation.
That was, but it was a lot. But anyways, moving on to our next topic. According to THR, and by the way, this is, and by the way, concerning that last topic, we haven't even discussed the Warner segment, by the way, which we'll get into later. But anyways, moving on to our next topic. According to THR, Taylor Swift will be making her feature debut, directorial debut, with Searchlight Pictures, as the pop sensation has penned an original script, which will be produced by the studios. But details on her upcoming projects with Searchlight are scarce. Though during her talk at the Toronto International Film Festival promoting her 14-minute short film Borderline music video, All Too Well, for which Swift both wrote and directed, Swift pointed to directors like Nora Ephron, who did stuff like Sleepless in Seattle and that type of stuff, Chloe Zhao and Greta Gerwig as influences. In a statement, Searchlight Pictures President David Greenbaum and Matthew Greenfield said in a statement, Taylor is a once-in-a-generation artist, and storyteller. It is a genuine joy and privilege to collaborate with her as she embarks on this exciting and creative journey. I know you're probably excited for this.
Listen. The 10-minute All Too Well short music video that she did was fantastic. This girl has a talent for storytelling. So of course she's gonna, and like I knew as soon as she directed that short music video, I was like, oh no, we've created another monster because now she's gonna want to direct. She's wanna do a different form of storytelling. Because that's what makes her song so good is she can tell a story in her songs. So, yeah, I mean, I feel very terrified for all the other characters and stuff because she's coming. But yeah, we'll see. She's gonna be cool. It'll be cool though. It's gonna be exciting. She penned an original script. I can't even. This girl did not take a break during COVID at all because, like, I don't know.
It's sorry, now I'm just thinking of Anti here, the lyrics to Anti here. It's me. Hi.
Hi,
I'm the problem.
it's true. That's like, oh my God, that's such a thing now. Yeah, no, it's gonna be a lot of fun. If you haven't watched her All Too Well music video, short story music video, whatever she's calling it, go check it out. It has Dylan O'Brien and Sadie Sink in it. They are fantastic.
And they give great performances.
They really do. She got really good performances out of both of them, and she's super talented, and I know it's probably freaking annoying for everybody who's not a Taylor Swift fan, but yeah, and I'm very curious to see what her original script, what kind of story she made, and like all that stuff, and when we see all that stuff come out later,
Yeah, no,
so
I agree.
exciting.
I agree with you as well and stuff and just
It's just funny.
it is funny.
I just never like. Of course, she's gonna direct. Like, of course.
Of course. It just
Of
it's
course,
of
it just
course.
makes sense.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on to an actual and official trailer reveal. We got an official trailer for the sequel, the Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, actually. Star Wars Jedi Survivor. Synopsis reads, the story of Cal Kestis, played by Cameron Monaghan, continues in Star Wars Jedi Survivor, a third-person galaxy-spanning action-adventure game from Respawn Entertainment, developed in collaboration with Lucasfilm Games. That narratively driven single-player title picks up 5 years after the events of Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order and follows Cal's increasingly desperate fight as the galaxy descends into further darkness. The game is set to be released on March 17, 2023, but it's set to launch on the PlayStation 5, Xbox Series, and PC via Steam. So this is interesting. We don't actually have much. We actually really only got like a kind of a lot of stuff with like the gameplay and
Yeah,
stuff, but
it's
like
very gameplay heavy trailer.
so like that's very interesting, but like but in terms of story, like we figure we kind of know who the guy in the capsule is, and it looks like he's got to kind of be an antagonist, which was interesting because I had a feel like there was a small suspicion I had where that might, do you remember the Force Unleashed games that kind of came out pre-Disney?
If I do very vaguely, I don't have a very good memory of them if I did play them.
Starkiller.
The name is familiar, but I do not remember very much
It
at
was
all.
basically like Darth Vader's apprentice. This would become the
Okay.
Inquisitors became a thing. So I thought he was going to be kind of like connected with that. However, what we kind of got was something interesting. Apparently, like when the character is like dressed in robes and stuff, that's from like the High Republic era. So that's going to be interesting and stuff. And then just seeing the gameplay is intense. My only two concerns. So there are a few characters kind of missing from this trailer that I'm hoping are okay and fine and stuff. And I imagine that they are. And I imagine that we're probably going to learn them in the story trailer, but I just want to make sure they're okay. And that is Meryn and Griff. For those that haven't played the game, it's up. Meryn was essentially a knight. It was essentially kind of like the Jedi version, the Star Wars version of a witch, a knight sister. And Griff was kind of like this forearm, kind of like pilot and stuff. And I really like the character. And I really like their interaction with Cal and how that became the arc, their arcs and stuff. And I'm just hoping they're okay. Because it does seem like it takes place a good chunk of time, which I'm kind of surprised at the huge time jump, by the way.
Yeah, me too.
Especially given the first game and stuff. But either way, I'm excited. I can't
Yeah,
wait.
I've played a bit of the first game because it was free on Game Pass for a while. And so I know I played some of it a long time ago, a while ago. So my memory's kind of fuzzy with this, and whatnot. So, but I know a lot of people really love these games, so and they're really good games, so they're a lot of fun. So it's very cool. And this one looks like it's going to be great as well.
I concur. I concur. Anyways, moving on to our next topic. We also got another game reveal. By the way, this was, I believe both of these were at the Game Awards this past week and such, so that's interesting. We got a game reveal trailer for the Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League, the Sinister Series, Discover the Origins of Amanda Waller, its infamous Task Force S, aka the Suicide Squad, as Harley Quinn, Deadshot, Captain Boomerang, and King Shark begrudgingly embark on their mission to take down the world's greatest DC superheroes, the Justice League. Featuring an original narrative set within an expansive open-world city of Metropolis, the Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League puts the four DC supervillains on a collision course with an invading alien force and DC superheroes who are now laser focused on destroying the city they've once vowed to protect. All the while, the Suicide Squad must be mindful of the lethal explosives implanted in their heads that could go off at the first sign of defiance. The game is set to drop on June 23rd, 2023, launching on the PlayStation 5, Xbox Series, and PC via Steam. So, with this trailer, we didn't really get much other than the fact that, like, Batman is going to be in this, and he is going to be voiced by the recently departed great Kevin Conroy, which again, I'm just
Yeah, it's very sad.
it is still sad that like we still lost him this year and stuff, and I'm happy that he gets to go out one last time. Apparently, he done. Apparently, I think he finished like most of his recording before he passed and stuff.
That's good.
So. But yeah, no, for fans of the Rocksteady games, the Arkham games, this is kind of like a final hurrah and stuff. And I'm very curious to see where how this Batman. I imagine though, like especially given that we saw like Superman and the Flash pretty much get like essentially mind controlled, how that's gonna work, how that's gonna go down and stuff, and just yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyways, moving on to our final topic, and this is again back to Warners. According to Variety, the 1970s era comedy Minx, which, by the way, for those that haven't seen the series, and I haven't even seen the series, to be perfectly honest, is about the world's first erotic magazine for women, starring Jake Johnson and Ophelia Lovibond, has been canceled at HBO Max. This, despite the fact that the show had been renewed for a second season back in May, as will the show preparing to wrap production on the second season when Warner Brothers Discovery decided to scrap the show and take it off the platform, with now producer Lionsgate Television planning on shopping the series to other outlets. And then a couple hours later, this happens. According to Variety, the recently canceled Westworld, as well as the sci-fi drama The Nevers, that's the one from the creators whose initial starts with J and W, as well as the romantic comedy anthology Love Life, are being pulled from the streamer, with The Nevers being canceled halfway through its first season by HBO. Now, while The Nevers and Minx do have a chance of surviving, the one difference is that Minx and, by extension, Love Life were HBO Max originals. Apparently, the removal of shows from HBO Max will allow WB Discovery to save money on originals that are paid for the cast and crew of productions by not continuing with the shows at all. And also, this has also impacted shows like this is one show I've been hearing about this on Twitter called The Gorita Chronicles, which didn't even which got canceled and then just
It's terrible, honestly. I just feel so bad for the people involved, especially in the original ones that like they don't have a chance to really be shopped around, and whatnot. It just really sucks. And like I saw somebody on Twitter saying that actors and the creators like kind of rely on those residuals to get them through when they're looking for other work. So
And I know it's not much, but it's like it's still a bit, but
it's
like
still something.
it's still something. And I'm just like, Jesus fucking Christ. Did you not learn anything from the Batgirl fiasco earlier this year?
Apparently not. Sorry. So it's stupid. It's
It's
very, very stupid.
stupid, it's irritating, and
I don't know how, as an actor or creative, you could feel comfortable going over there right now because of everything being so in flux and not really having feeling any stability there, you know?
I'm kind of with you as well. Like, for example, the only reason why I can even see Gunn and Safran doing it is because it's DC.
Yeah, and then
As well as probably a big, huge paycheck.
yeah, and see, like Gunn has a name for himself, so he can like use that to negotiate. So he's, but not everybody has that kind of
Power.
opportunity or power.
So yeah, no, and I feel for the creators of these shows, even for something like Westworld, which I know was canceled, and but also just to take it off the platform, like it doesn't. Well, for one thing, it doesn't make a lot of logical sense because that. Look, the show ended, I know, but like still, that's one of your high prestige shows.
I know it is. It's stupid.
And it's just like I'm just like, what the fuck is going on with you Warners?
I know. I
And
know.
I just like we know who this is. This is David Zaslav. And MGZ just a total just
It's just, I don't know. I don't know if they're that broke that they really can't afford to have them on the freaking streamer or what, but it's really stupid because if they can afford to do it, they need to leave it on there so they could pay their talent. So,
Yeah, and not only that, but like I'm deeply surprised the unions haven't gotten involved with this. Like the Directors Guild of America, SAG, Screen Actors Guild, freaking the Writers Guild of America, and like just other IATSE for Christ's sake. I'm surprised that no one has like said anything. Like I haven't heard any statements from any of those guys, and like I'm deeply surprised that there has been lawsuits. Because you think that there'd be like class action lawsuits.
There should be. I don't know. It's just wild. It's just wild to me.
Yeah, I know. And obviously, to anyone, whether it's Minx, Westworld, Love Life, or any of the shows that were affected by this, my heart obviously goes out to you. As a creative myself, this fucking sucks. And it just.
It's very frustrating. I feel so bad for the people that are involved.
Yeah.
And I wish you guys the best of luck.
Same here. And just what the fuck's going on with you, Warners?
Don't know. Warner's is just burying themselves into the ground. So that's what it feels like.
It just feels like there's a hole. And you know what the fucked up part about us about this is? They're starting to promote their like 100-year anniversary. That's just fucked. Like there's so much wrong with that and stuff, and just also, are the Animaniacs okay?
I have no idea. Hopefully.
I'm just like Wacko, Don, are you guys still alive?
No idea.
Just wave a flag if you're wave a flag if you're still alive. I'm sorry,
Just.
it's just yeah. Anyways, so that's it for so. Moving on to our recommendations, which we have done for the first, unless you have something, Jamie.
I did watch, I finally watched, hold on, let me get the title right. I messed it up. Can't remember. Hold on.
So what was it?
So I finally was able to watch Everything Everywhere All at Once. Finally. I had some downtime last night, and so I put it on. I had to rewatch the beginning like twice because I was getting kind of, I didn't get confused, but I was like, I feel like I'm missing something. So I like I got like maybe like 20 minutes into it, and then I restarted it because I feel like I'm just missing something. But it was fantastic. It's crazy, but it was just really good. It was a lot of fun. I really liked the movie a lot.
I'm in love with this movie. This movie, like, literally, I'll say this when we do the best of our year list, but this movie, after it was done, I was in a screening of it, and I quickly took out my phone, I powered it up, and I called my mother. Well, not called my mother. I texted my mother, and I told her that I loved her and I missed her.
Oh.
That's how much
Yeah,
this movie affected me.
that last part of the movie was a lot. Oh.
Just that is a movie where it's like truly, it is literally what the title has said is everything,
Yeah.
everywhere, and all at once.
Yeah, it was crazy. And the freaking everything bagel like monologue that she has in kind of like the middle of the movie was like, oh my God. I was like, that's so deep. I was like, that makes so much sense though. I was like, oh
In a bagel.
no. No, but they were all the actors were fantastic and it was just a lot of fun. It was cool. It was a really good movie. I really liked it.
I'm glad you enjoyed it, 'cause this movie just it's just fucking I have no words. It's just that fucking good,
I
guys.
know it is. It is.
And if you have not seen this movie yet, I just what the fuck are you doing
I've
listening
been
to this?
meaning to watch it, but I also knew I would need to be able to pay attention, not be distracted, and to have time. So that's why I've been waiting to watch it. And so last night was like the perfect night because like I had nothing else to do. I put my phone down. I just watched it. So it was good.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah,
But yeah, I
anyway.
restarted it because I'm like, I really feel like I'm missing something. I was getting stressed. I'm like, did I miss something? So I
I know.
restarted it.
But yeah, no. It's
Because it starts off right off the bat. You're just like throwing it in and you're just like, oh, okay.
Yeah, no, I just this fucking movie. Sorry, I just I'm trying I'm waiting until I think it's next week or the week after when we do the best of the year list that like I talk about I gush about this movie completely because there's so much about this movie I want to just talk about.
Yeah,
But
no, for sure.
I'm holding off on that. So if you haven't seen it, go watch it. I think it's I don't know where it's available at. It's probably somewhere on streaming.
It's if you have, what is it? I watch it on Prime because we have another subscription that's attached to it. Oh, why? I think if you have Showtime subscription, you can get it for free. You can just watch it. So, that's how I was able to watch it because my mom has Showtime. So I'm using her account. So, but it is on Amazon to rent or to buy, and I'm sure you can rent or buy it on iTunes or whatever. But yeah, I don't know if it's on Hulu, but yeah, if you just Google it, you'll find out where it's at. So, yeah, no, definitely recommend it. Highly, highly, highly recommend it. So.
Yeah, so yeah, I definitely recommend it. But also, given in lieu that I don't have any recommendations this week, which is a shocker, even for myself, but this week has been so fucking busy. I might have some next week, but like normally I have something, and I was hoping I actually would be able to like review something, but like unfortunately I wasn't able to. In lieu of that though, I have a great interview with Werewolves director, with Werewolves and Blood Relatives director, which by the way, for those that haven't seen both movies, Werewolves Within is basically Knives Out with Werewolves, the best way I can describe it, and Blood Relatives, which I actually reviewed, I think about a few weeks ago, is pretty much a road trip movie about two vampires, or that I highly recommend checking out. I think
Cool.
one's on Shudder and then the other one is somewhere on streaming. But I had an interview with the director of with the director as well, so just to kind of give a pretext of like who Joss Whedon is, he is the director of Werewolves Within, but he's also the producer of Blood Relatives, and I had a great interview with him, which you can start listening to right now. Hey everyone, this is Josh from Conversations Two Geeks. Right now, I have just an awesome horror director with me and stuff. He directed recently Werewolves Within and was a producer on Noah Segan's Blood Relatives. Let me introduce director Josh Rubin. How are you doing today, other Josh or Josh?
So good, both Joshes. I mean, I got Josh Martin, we got Josh Rubin. We're two geeks. We're two buds. We're here on the Two Geek Show. I'm great. How are you?
Good. And also, thank you for offering me to interview you and stuff. I was a really big fan of Werewolves Within and Blood Relatives in general, and we're going to talk about that. But I've just been a big fan of you in general and stuff. And yeah,
thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So, but first, just for the viewers and stuff. So obviously, you directed last year's Werewolves Within, which, by the way, if you haven't seen, I highly recommend it. The best way I kind of like to describe it, it's like Knives Out with werewolves.
Yeah, Claws Out. That's what we called it at Ubisoft.
Claws Out. Okay, that was actually pretty good. But yeah, no. That's the best way to describe it. But yeah, no. Obviously, you directed that. But how did you get your start in the business? What were your most inspirations growing up? And most of all, why horror?
Well, I was a horror lover before I was a comedy guy. I'm known for comedy with College Humor and Dropout and all that kind of stuff. But I loved horror first. I got my start basically just acting and everything I could, taking acting classes in Woodstock, New York, doing Woodstock Youth Theater in upstate. And then I moved to the city and did some acting training, actually under Mike Nichols, who did The Birdcage and Graduate and Wolf. I didn't appreciate then probably how iconic that dude is, but I had some like several masterclass hours with a legend when I was 18 years old. And so I got my start doing that, and I realized that no one was going to spoon feed me the opportunity to, I don't know, get famous, get an agent, any of that stuff. And so I started making videos with my friends and putting them on the internet back when like Whitest Kids You Know and Invisible Engine and Derek Comedy and like all these other like sketch groups back then were putting videos up. And that's how College Humor took a liking to us, said, hey, do you want to make videos for our site the same way you're doing it for yourselves? And that was how I started, you know, basically directing full time, acting full time, producing full time. And that turned into commercial directing, which I did for a little bit. I still kind of dabble in, but mostly just got me my first opportunity, or I guess kicked my ass into gear to create my first opportunity to make my first movie, Scare Me, which turned into Werewolves. And now I'm just, just another horror guy.
Yeah. And obviously that turned into your most recent picture, Blood Relatives, which I know you didn't direct. Noah Segan, who, for those that aren't familiar with him, he's Ryan, as I like to call him, Rian Johnson's buddy.
Yeah, Rian Johnson's, I don't know if I've been saying utility actor, but I don't know if that's derogatory. He is his Swiss Army actor. Mm-hmm. Like he does and shows up for like what Rian needs and knows that Noah can handle it, and they've been buddies for a long time. But yeah, it's pretty funny that like Knives Out was so inspirational to me and was such an exciting forthcoming film when we were making Werewolves. It was like, oh, there's going to be some similarity here as a popular whodunit. And the fact that Noah was in it, and then Noah later was like basically a test audience member for Werewolves for an early cut and showed me this script, Blood Relatives, and asked me if I'd produce it. And I was like, yes, I'm not a paperwork producer, but I will definitely like hook you up with some actors and help you out creatively.
Yeah, I know. And obviously, you know, and also you just answered my first question, by the way, was like, how did you get involved with Blood Relatives? What was it like producing for someone's directorial debut, especially after you made your own directorial debuts with Scare Me and with Werewolves Within, respectively?
Oh, my God. It's an amazing question. You're very good at this. You've done this before. It was great because I love helping people out. I love taking a filmmaker or a product that I love, a script that I love, and just like offering whatever advice I can or whatever kind of assistance I can, regardless of the budget. That's what I want to do in the future. I'm super inspired by people like the Duplass brothers. Their book, Like Brothers, was super inspirational. If you guys haven't heard The Cavalry Isn't Coming, a speech that he gave at South by Southwest that Mark Duplass gave, just YouTube it. It's so inspirational. And the book kicked my ass into gear to make my own stuff. And it also feels like a book a little bit about like community and helping each other and figuring out how to like help your buddies make movies. And that's what I'd like to do. So for me, it was great because I got to make something that Noah wanted to make that much better, you know, where he saw an opportunity to like, you know, do something within his vision. I'd offer a suggestion to the best of my talent and creative ability or knowledge, and he'd go, oh shit, that does make it better. You know, that's what producing is, which baffles me when people end up working with shitty producers or producers who are there for their own kind of gain. Like for me, I love nothing more than helping out my buddies, and Noah's a buddy. I love that script. And I'm trying to do it for other people too, you know?
That's amazing. That's amazing. Especially like the fact that you're like willing to help out your services and stuff, and just, you know, just that community thing. Like obviously like finding community, especially within the inspirations and stuff. And obviously those aspects of producer are very influential. And I'm just wondering, are there any also other aspects of producing that you learn, like working on Blood Relatives, that you might apply to your own future projects?
Yeah, wow. What have I learned as a producer, perhaps on Blood Relatives, that I'll apply to other projects? I mean, I think that most of the sort of producerial skill sets I sort of knew. There was more like technical stuff that I'm still kind of learning. I'm still kind of learning about sales and like the business side of it. Like, Lial Naeem, who's our other producer, essentially handled the entire business of the movie, the LLC and the, you know, looking at the sales stuff and the legal stuff. I mean, my brain is just so not there. So if you're listening, you can take advantage of me. I wouldn't know how you were, if you were doing it or not. But no, I mean, I'm more about the technical side, like more about like, you know, the conform the film needs to go through, the process the film itself needs to go through. On a technical side, I'm still learning this. In order to be delivered, like the assets that need to be delivered to, in this case, it was Shutter AMC, to deliver the film to get it done. You know, Rec 709 and Hi-Rez X, Y, and Z file, whatever it is. Like kind of learning that aspect of it is all still new to me. But what I knew before and what I carried into it is what I think is most important, which is like, not people pleasing, but problem solving and making sure that your crew, your cast is comfortable, making sure that people are being communicated to respectfully, properly, that, you know, if they need to vent, that you're there to vent for them. There's the guy who runs Blumhouse, with Jason Blum, his name's Cooper Samuelson. And he said that there was this Seed and Spark interview. He said this really cool thing that I was super hit by, which is that words are free. Which is means like it costs nothing for you to tell someone they're doing a great job, and that goes a really long way. And like words are actually a super like undervalued asset, ammunition, tool that we don't necessarily consider. Like a simple thank you card or congratulations, or you know, a cheerleading of a specific thing that they saw in your film or in something that you did goes such a long way. And people really value words.
Yeah, no, definitely. And that's also something that just, you know, as someone that also on the side of doing obviously this podcast and stuff, doesn't want to be a filmmaker, it definitely, you know, it's nice to say thank you, and just
you have to,
and it's just, you know, just saying
when you're making stuff for peanuts.
Especially I think you hit on the mark, especially when you're making stuff for peanuts. Okay. Now, let's go back to the big one. Werewolves Within. Out of all the video games in the world, what drew you to this one?
To adapt? Well, this was what they call an open directing assignment. So I hadn't heard, like a lot of people, like even my producer at Ubisoft, they admit, you know, this is an obscure video game. I had not heard of Werewolves Within as a game. When I got the gig, which was what's called an open directing assignment, which is basically... go in and pitch your best idea in a pool and a bit of directors, and you'll either get it or you won't. And I just pitched my vision of the film, which read like a dream. Misha Wolf's script is just phenomenal. Yes, her last name is Wolf, and we all love it. So it was just it was an IP that Mishna, our writer, had picked and just saw an opportunity as a lover of The Thing and a lover of Clue and a lover of Among Us. You know, that there was a story in there that could be really commercial, that could have a lot of kind of viability. And I read it and I was like, yes, this feels like all the movies I grew up kind of watching. My pitch to all the actors was, I want to make Fargo by way of Amblin, like make Fargo feel like an Amblin movie. Like say all the esoteric, excuse me, like all the esoteric characters and kind of eccentric humor of a Coen Brothers movie, and even the darkness and the blood of a Coen Brothers movie, when shit gets real, But there's this kind of wicked sense of humor about it. But let's have those Amblin-esque, like anamorphic lenses. Let's have those Amblin-esque oneers and the, you know, that kind of levity to it. And it actually ended up, I think, by nature of casting, you know, Sam Richardson, Sam informs, just like any actor will, Sam informs the vibe of the whole movie, just as Milana informs the vibe of the movie, just as whatever. So, but if I'd cast, you know, someone with maybe a darker disposition or a more kind of self-seriousness, you know, it would have been a different film. But Sam is so inherently, there's such an endearing quality about him and such a levity about him. He's so inherently funny as is. And there's a way that Finn could have been played that would have made the film, you know, could have veered off in a more just kind of like dead on, just sort of, I don't know, basic direction. And Sam's just like, no, I'm going to come in here and like fire on all comedic cylinders while also being just vulnerable and wonderful.
Yeah, no. And just hearing your description, Fargo by way of Amblin, it just, it makes me go back and just think of certain moments from the movie. Just like, for example, there is a particular bit in the movie, like when Finn first meets Lonnie's character. Okay, I need to ask this question because this has been driving me nuts since who made the decision? I imagine it was probably a music writer or something, but and I don't know if this was also in the script as well, but who made the decision to put in the sign by Ace of Base? Because every time I hear that song, I think of the movie. So it was you.
Well, I'll tell you why. I love telling this story or explaining the reason why it was I saw the sign. So my sister, Rachel Yamagata is her name. She's her dad's Japanese, my half-sister. She is a singer-songwriter, but she was my horror gatekeeper. She was basically my introduction to horror. She's my 9 years older than me. She's my older sister. And there was, you know, she introduced me to Freddie and Jason and, you know, Stephen King's Cat's Eye and you name it. She's the reason in a big way why I love horror. So one day I'm sitting in my bedroom playing with my action figures. It's, I don't know, 1990, whatever it is. And Rachel comes in the room, my cooler older sister. And she's like, hey, you want to go see Jason Goes to Hell? And I'm like 9 years old or whatever. And she's 19 or 20. Like, how fucking cool is that? And I'm like, what? Yes. As a big fan of Jason, and, you know, we'd watch all the whatever Sunday matinees and Friday 13, you know, because they just play those movies on cable. And so we get in her Volkswagen Rabbit and drive to the movie theater, drive to the mall. And Ace of Bases, I Saw the Sign, comes on. And so that memory became this powerful, it just stamped that memory to as a forever memory, you know, to use the Pixar term. I'm heading to the mall to see a horror movie with my older sister. So it's like the acceptance of an older sibling, like as a lover of horror, a bonding moment. I love the mall. It just hit me. My brain exploded in Ratatouille fashion with just like horror-y, gooey, lovey goodness. And I don't know at what point the song kind of came into the fray, probably when I was doing kind of like my director's polish on the film itself. I just put it in there. I was like, I got to put this song in here.
Cause it's just, oh my God, that's a truly heartwarming story, by the way. And I just, it makes now the scene kind of just sweet in general, even though like, and I won't, and I don't want to give away the main twist of the movie, even though it has been out for like a year and stuff, but like the fact that the song kind of has a double meaning is just kind of interesting. And and that's all I'll say. But either way, I just that was hard. I just, and also hearing about your half sister introducing you to horror and stuff, that just it warmed my heart a little.
Oh, thank you, man. Yeah, it warms mine too. You know, I put one of her songs in my first film. Scare me, like right after Fred like shuts the basement door, put in one of her tunes. She's always been so gracious about letting me use her music, and so I'm just trying to get my way back to an appropriate place too, especially if I get to do a bigger movie, to plug in a Rachel Yamagata song, because she's my horror gateway.
Yeah, and speaking of movies, actually, so this one was kind of released last year in kind of an interesting place, and basically my question is, what was it like kind of being one of the first movies to be released following the lockdown of 2020? What was that?
Well,
like?
Yeah, man. It was kind of, it was I don't want to say it was scary or it was even rough because it was an exciting kind of endorphin buzz, much needed during the kind of, I don't know, bleak buzzkill of having to sit in our house for a year and would change or whatever it was. I released two movies. Werewolves is the second film I've done. I've only ever made two movies as a director. My second movie released during a pandemic. And that changes the entire trajectory of the film's life to a degree. I'm so lucky. It took me a while for it to sink in that I starred in a film in Wounded Fawn, for example, or had produced a film like Blood Relatives, and that we were going to go out to film festivals and actually enjoy it. Not one time, which I did with Werewolves at Tribeca Film Festival, which is fun. We didn't play many festivals with the pandemic of it all, but to play several and to be out there in public and to see several people. So it was exciting because it gave my life a nice oomph. It varied things up from being in my pajamas and writing and promoting and this and that. The other thing, it's like the Green Beret thing of you need variation. And you need a routine to vary up your like bunker life in an apocalyptic situation. What better way to vary up my life than like promote like both movies? But Werewolves, the cool thing about it was, that was at a specific moment in the pandemic when like vaccines are out and it's over and it's 4th of July, everyone's going to be able to have a barbecue and all that stuff. And so there was a moment when we were all like freshly vaxxed. We were at Tribeca and we were like losing masks and talking face to face, and my wife and I hadn't gotten that yet, still yet again, for till a year later. And so it felt very much like hopeful and wonderful at that very specific moment. But it was very quick, like I and people were still freaked out to go to the theaters. But you bet your ass, like I went to the Lemley here in North Hollywood and did a little talk back, even though it was like not a big crowd at all. It was a very small crowd. People were still kind of nervous. And I went to the Alamo Draft House. Still a very small crowd, here in LA, my favorite theater. I was like, you bet I'm gonna go to the Alamo and get a burger and watch my own movie and hear some laughter. You know what I mean? So what I'm really like, there's no bummer to it. I think if anything, it's just getting me more eager to make another genre film and to have my like my nope moment or barbarian moment or bodies, bodies, bodies moment where like it can go out and be released and people can go see it and bring their buddies. And people will be it will still be a church going process as long as at least theaters are around and available. And my God, I hope they are forever to do it.
I crossed my fingers on that as well. And also for full context, I actually saw Worlds Within in a theater. Like
God
I
bless you.
yeah, and like I had okay. I had like heard something about the movie and stuff. Maybe it was through Twitter or something. And I was just like, and I actually brought a friend along with me, and like I had heard nothing about, and I no context, no idea about the movie. I didn't know about the connection stuff. And so I just went in cold and stuff, and I fucking enjoyed it and stuff. And yeah, I just, especially when you have that like cold experience and stuff, and it's like, and I didn't even know it was based on a video game as well. Like just,
A lot of people didn't. You know what's funny is just real quick, Wayne Duvall's character, Sam Parker, they're getting in this, this fight, not to give anything away, and in on Main Street in the snowstorm, and Sam Richardson and Wayne, they're like having this like fist fight in the middle of town. And there's this moment where this knife comes out of his wrist, he has this like wrist blade, and everybody thought that that was some like homage to Assassin's Creed or like, I don't know, some Ubisoft video game such and such. And I was just like, no, that's just, I thought that was just a cool like assassin's tool that like Wayne's character could have, and everyone's like, that's Ubisoft putting their stamp on it. And it's like, no, I just thought that was cool. Like that was like a taxi driver gun or like a, there's been so many different movies with like a blade popping out of a, a wrist device or whatever. So I was like, I gotta put that in. Everyone's like, that's Ubisoft.
Yeah, no, I was
Excuse
thinking,
me.
yeah, no, I was just thinking, like, who's the fucking character? Like, I was thinking, honestly, like, there's a character from the first Hellboy. I forgot his fucking name, but it's one of the villain. It's one of the villains, and he had like a knife coming out and stuff. And I think it's like Rasputin or something, but I don't want to say it is and stuff. But yeah. Anyways, and speaking of that, moving on to the final question, and this is the one
Yes,
I've been very curious and very eager to ask you about.
sir.
Let's talk about Darkman. For those that
Hell
aren't
yeah.
unfamiliar with Darkman, back in 1990, Sam Raimi wrote and directed a movie called, well, actually, I don't know if he was right. I think he might have co-written. Don't quote me on that. He directed a movie called Darkman. Now, this was before, this was post Evil Dead. This was post Evil Dead 2, but before he did Spider-Man. So this was like his first movie. like in between those eras and stuff. And it pretty much stars Liam Neeson as a scientist who, after getting attacked by the mob, winds up his face becomes deformed and such, and he has to create new faces every like 60 seconds or else like the experiment like wears off and stuff. And he winds up getting revenge on those who attacked him. It also starts a very young Frances McDormand and such, and it is bonkers. I love it. And for the longest time, ever since Worlds Within came out, you have been clamoring to like get a reboot and stuff. But I've just been curious, and I don't know if you would feel be even comfortable talking about it because I don't know if like you're still in the process of talking about Universal and stuff. But what would be your take on the material? I just want to fucking know.
Oh man, well, I can't tell you what my take would be, but I can dance around it. I can tell you the version of it that I want to see and what warrants it. Because here's the thing. It's still an obscure movie. The movie's amazing. If whoever's listening has not seen Dark Man, it is a completely rewatchable superhero horror film. And it's very, very, like, it's super fun and kind of spooky and wicked and funny and deliciously Raimi, you know? And he wanted to do Batman. He couldn't get the rights to do Batman. Batman 89 had come out. So he's like, fuck it, I'm going to make my own character. Here it is. And it's also an homage to the Universal movie monsters, horror and heart, and the whole thing. So my take would be to not reboot it and have the new Darkman be some like programmer with abs, because you can't compete with the Marvel superheroes of it all. There's just no, it wouldn't make sense, in my opinion, to compete with an Avengers movie. I think this needs to be, I think the way in needs to be different. And my dream would be to make a legacy sequel because Liam Neeson is still kicking ass. He's still talking about, he recently, I mean, I'm talking about under a year ago, was cited as saying that he would absolutely return to the character again if the script was there. And I think there's a way to make this film about Darkman today after kind of, you know, he was vilified. I mean, the end of Darkman, he walks away from the love of his life because he's disfigured and he's like, there's just no going back. No matter how much I love you and you love me, there's no way we can make this work. My face is going to keep melting and I'm a monster. So what does that do to a person? And what would lure that personality to come out of the dark? And so that's where I would start. And I think there's a love story in there. I think that you can absolutely bring Liam back, but also new characters. I mean, that whole world is just so fun, you know. And you jump in such a way that you know the challenge of it would be to jump in such a way that you know exactly what the tone of this world is. And also, like, especially for fans of the new Candyman, as an example, as like a quote unquote legacy sequel, it's like you have to create a brand new way in for audiences to be introduced to a character based on this, you know, obscure horror hero movie that many of us know, but many of us don't know.
No, and
That's the trick.
definitely. And also just the love story of it. Obviously, in addition to Liam, I take it you would try to get back Francis, right?
I mean, who knows? You know what I mean? Who knows?
No,
I
I
don't know if
just
she had a good, I don't think she had a good time on that one.
Ooh,
There's a
yeah.
big article about it. It was a tough shoot. It was tough on Raimi. I think Raimi's got, you know, some feelings about how that whole process went down. There's an incredible article about the history of Dark Man. I want to say in like Vanity Fair or something. And it sounded like a hellscape of a shoot. But it is kind of criminal that no one's touched that IP because that is like, in my opinion, that's one of the most invaluable IPs, especially in the wake of Malignant and of like horror of these superhero movies. I mean, come on, it's like between those two things and I don't know. What Blum's doing, come on.
I mean, again, I'm surprised. I'm even surprised that like just not Jason, in addition to Jason Bob, like James Wan hasn't even made an attempt yet. Because I feel like this would be in his wheelhouse in general, not to try to create competition between the two.
I agree. No, I agree. You know what? If James Wan gets to make a Dark Man, that's what I want to see. And that would make a fuck of a lot of sense. Because he's got the style, he's got the hold on action, he's got the hold on. He is the obvious choice. I would want him to do it, but my white whale in life is to play in the Darkman world because I just it was such a part of my formidable horror hero upcoming. I love Batman. I love Freddy Krueger. Darkman was the mishmash of both. It's like, this is a horror Batman, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely. And I'm just like, yeah, that's a pretty good description. But yeah, no. Anyways, I think that wraps it up for us. Thank you so much for coming on. I really enjoyed talking with you about Werewolves Within, about Blood Relatives, about Darkman and such.
Yeah,
And
dude.
yeah, and I had a great time. Thank you for coming on and have a lovely day, essentially.
You too, Josh. Amazing questions. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Thank you, Josh Rubin, for dedicating your time. I really had a fucking fun time talking with you, man. And yeah, and again, highly recommend you check out both, actually all three of the movies, Werewolves Within and Blood Relatives. All of them should be on some sort of on or on various streaming platforms and such. And yeah. But anyways, so that was a great interview. Again, thank you to Josh. Scare Me, Werewolves Within and Blood Relatives. All of them should be on some sort of on or on various streaming platforms and such. And yeah. Anyways,
Yeah.
mind closing us out?
No problem. So feel free to follow us on all our social media platforms. We're on Twitter at Convo with Two Geeks. We're also on Facebook and Instagram at Conversation with Two Geeks. And if you want to send us an email of anything from this episode or one of our previous episodes, our email is at conversationwithtwogeeks@gmail.com.
All right, take care of yourselves, everyone, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.